I'm Lee Brown. This is Crazy Shit in Real Estate. And can I tell you how much fun the conversation is that you're about to embark into? I am going to talk about MMT, QE, QT, interest rates, investing, all kinds of things with one of the top 10 lenders in the country, Aaron Chapman. Buckle up, friends, because if you really want to understand what's happening with money and with the economy, this guy's got information that will make your clients stronger. So buckle up and here we go.
You're listening to Crazy Shit in Real Estate. You'll be amazed at all these wild but true situations that others have found themselves in. Because on this show, you'll hear uncensored, unbelievable stories from the world of real estate. I'm Lee Brown. Let's dive right in.
Before you get the rest of the story, I'd love to share a quick message from today's sponsor. If you've never heard of Follow Up Boss, you're going to love it. And it's going to get you organized in a way that will actually impact your business for profitability and for better excellence with those you're serving. For more information, go to followupboss.com/crazy. And so, Aaron, why don't you tell us a little bit about your journey in real estate, where you're located now? You don't sound like you're still in New Mexico, but are you?
No, I'm not. I left New Mexico very, very young. My dad was a miner. And so we went from there to Wyoming, then from Wyoming to Arizona, and then we went to Utah. We had cattle ranch in all my high school years. So I was a cattle rancher. And then from there, I went back into the oil fields of Wyoming when I left high school. From there to Arizona, my parents sold the ranch and moved back to Arizona. My dad went back to doing some mine stuff and whatever. And I went running heavy equipment, driving truck, all the stuff that I knew. And then from there, an opportunity got to get in the mines with my dad in northern New Mexico. I had a wife and an infant son at the time. So I thought this would be awesome. I've always wanted to be down in the mines. I've heard about it all the time. And I got that opportunity. It was one of the greatest jobs I've ever had. You know, you're down several hundred feet underground. You're drilling into the rock by hand with this, what looks like a jackhammer, but it's on an extendable leg and it has a rotating bit. You drill in 6 feet, pull it out, do it again, do it 30 some odd times on what they call the face, load it up with if I remember correctly, 250 pounds of explosives, step around the corner, blow it up, clean it out, support the ground, do it again. It was a simple business model, business plan. And I enjoyed every bit of it because it was me against the rock. And I got to see every day a new piece of rock that nobody else ever saw in history, right? So it was really cool.
That's a cool perspective.
It's an awesome perspective. Plus that it was you fighting the earth. Earth wanted to kill you. That thing would cave in on us here and there. But we were fighting back. It was awesome. And yeah, I got to run heavy equipment underground, all these things. But then the project got lean and they had to shut it down. I was the first guy to let go because I was one of the newest guys there, which really sucked. But I thought I got a resume so dang big. I'm only 23 years old, but I've been out doing since I was 15. So I would walk into places and everybody I was qualified to get a job from kept telling me I was overqualified. And it got to the point that I was so lean on money that I went to go apply for a $10 an hour truck driving job to haul landscape rock out of Phoenix. And I drove up there, brought my resume, and I got the same bullshit statement, overqualified. And I was desperate at that point. And as I'm walking away from the place, I'm wiping tears from my face. I climb in my truck, and my wife had given me a coupon as I left for free diapers because we were out of diapers and we couldn't even afford them. So I had to go find a grocery store that I can get these diapers. And as I'm leaving that place, my gas light comes on in my truck.
Of course.
Well, yes, exactly. Continues the insult. As I drive up to a grocery store that had the gas pumps, I pulled up to those pumps. I pulled out my debit card. That's all I had. And I said a quick little prayer. Ran it. I got a decline. So I'm thinking I have an unanswered prayer at that point. So I rifle through my truck. I find a few coins, hoping for a lost dollar. Because, you know, gas was 89 cents a gallon back then. I started walking that. I locked up my doors. I started walking the parking lot for what felt like a couple of hours. And I would look around. I would find something. I'd look around, make sure no one was looking. I'd drop real quick and I'd pick it up. Penny, dime, nickel. And after that period of time, I got enough to get a couple gallons of gas. I traded my time for those 2 gallons of gas. I went into the grocery store, quickly found the diapers, standing in line with one item, and I had to give them a coupon. It was just one of these feelings that you just can't duplicate by telling you. You have to experience yourself to feel how poor that felt to hand that off. And as I'm leaving, I did not make eye contact with anybody. I was getting out of there as fast as I can. Well, as I'm going out, somebody recognized me and called me out. I turned to face this guy named Keith. He asked me how things were. I shared the exact same story I just shared with you. He says, let's go to dinner. I'm like, dude, I can't afford dinner. He goes, no, I got a gift certificate to Red Lobster. I'll take you and your wife out this week. So we met him and he shared with me his experience in the mortgage industry because he used to be the guy who did all the dispatch work at a company I used to dig swimming pools for. And that's what I thought he did. But he explained, no, I'm in this industry now. And he gave me the name and number for a guy, gave me his business card. I cut a foot off of my hair. I shaved. My mom bought me some clothes to make me look businesslike. And I went and interviewed and I got the job as a telemarketer that weekend. It was in December of 1997. And let me tell you the most miserable shit I've ever done. Nobody likes telemarketing. If you do, it's because you're awesome at it. I wasn't. But over time, I was able to develop some leads and convince the owners there to let me work some of my own leads. And that's where it all started in 97. And now I sit in front of you 24 years later, I guess, 23, 24.
25. I mean, it's the silver anniversary of that telemarketing job.
There we go. So 25 years later, there's 1.4 million people in the United States that do the job that I do, which is the licensed loan originator or a loan originator. Not all of them are licensed or registered. I'm ranked in the top 10 in the United States for what I do. Last year, I closed 1,378 transactions. And I'm also being ranked probably even lower in that right now because of how many transactions we do in a really shitty market.
Well, shitty is all relative, right? I mean, obviously markets come and markets go. The difference is the ones who adapt to it and keep working.
100%. It is definitely relative. For my industry, we're down 65%. For me personally and my team, I'm down 26%.
It's all perspective, right? It's
100%. Because so what it gives us the opportunity to really sharpen things up for us as a team and really prepare ourselves for when it does start to come back. Because then those who are sharpening, expanding, and doing the right things now, they're the ones who get the lion's share when it all starts to come back. Absolutely. So there's a lot of things we're working on there right now that we could definitely get into if that's something you want to.
And it's also that moment where you realize working right now is what the consumer needs. They need to know, what am I supposed to do with this wild, the fluctuation of interest rates? Where are we going? What are we doing? Any loan originator who's hiding from the public is hurting people because people have questions right now. And that's what an opportunity to serve and to, well, I guess you're having conversations with the rock that's never been seen before because people haven't seen a market like this. There's a perfect overlay to your geological life there. I'm just going to point that out. They've never dealt with this. Our millennials, I guess you're medium age like me. You look like we're similar in age, although I'm aging better, obviously. But the young people thought 3% was the norm on a 30-year fix because we'd been there since 08. And I think everybody I know had been advertising historic low interest rates since 2008, not realizing that this entire generation thought that was normal. So there's a complete reset going on right now. And then the old guard forgot about it because they've been out of practice for a long time to realize that money does have a cost and free money has a cost too. And we're now paying the cost of the free money because it was never going to be free forever. And so if you're thinking about the opportunities that you're seeing in a changing market, your business is impacted, of course, but not as much as your competitors. What is the number one conversation you're having with the public right now, you and your team, as they ask questions about, what do I do, Aaron?
So I work with real estate investors. That's my target. And that's who I've been working with since 2003. And it's a much easier conversation because you can get them the data and show them. So I'd really like to take them down that historical low rate thing you just referenced, because when you look at rates as they've been tracked since 1971 to today, the average interest rate for anybody living in the house, an owner-occupied home, is about 7.78%. Still higher than where we are now. If you take out quantitative easing, when the Fed started putting money into the market starting January 1st, 2009, until I think it was March of 2022, that nearly 13-year window, the average interest rate for the homeowner was 9.1%. So you're correct in all these people, even in my world, thinking that 3 to 5% was going to be the norm. It wasn't. We have now nullified the last two market cycles we should have had. You had market cycles are 5 to 7 years. Everybody says, well, everything cycles every 5 to 7 years anyway. So we just hold on, get an ARM loan right now and hold on for another 5 years, maybe seven. And then you can just refinance. I mean, guys, we have 13 years of quantitative easing. We have no clue what that's going to do in the future. I have no idea what the impact is. We live in a world full of predators. Humans are the apex predator, but we still fall prey to other humans. And when you have somebody telling you, take this now and refinance later, They don't give a damn about you later. They give a damn about you getting taken care of, them getting from you today. So
Can we just say that one more time for the people in the back? Because I am so damn tired of seeing realtors and mortgage loan officers alike on social media saying, go ahead, you can refinance next year because everything's going down. Can you please say again that that is a false prophet's way to put things?
It's more than a false prophet. I think a false prophet, and sometimes they believe what they're saying. These people are in many cases are straight up lying to you because one, they say it's going to come down. They have no idea it's going to come down. And here's my question. Okay, let's say they're right. It comes down. Come down from what? It has to go up to come down. And it is literally going to scream up, I believe, between now and that time. And we're going to then have to come down in maybe they go up to the teens. Let's say it goes up to like 12, 13%. Then they say, oh, so it's going to come down 2 points. So now you're paying 9%. Still way worse than where we are today. Warren Buffett says that the 30-year fixed mortgage is the greatest financial instrument in history because it's a one-way bet. If for some reason you're wrong, you still refinance in 5 years. But if you're right, you have now put yourself in a position to where you have protected yourself from extreme losses from all those people that took these arms. The last time we used the arms and we saw the arms really take hold in the market was during the 3, 4, 5, and 6. And then what happened in 8, 9 through 12, right? All those people could not make those payments. They couldn't get that refinance done. The house values went down. They couldn't bring the money to the table and it flooded the market with foreclosures and the real estate investors took over, right? That's where my business went through the freaking roof. I'm telling all of them, take the safety of that 30 years and you can always refinance if you want to, but you don't ever have to.
Right. I mean, it boils down to the payment. If you can live with the payment, quit looking at the rate. And that's what you've always got to be focused on. And I'm just going to point out for those of y'all that are not economic and money nerds like Aaron and I are, the term quantitative easing is the way they pull the wool over your eyes. That is the government printing money. They are putting more supply of money in the marketplace, which is what drives inflation up. And everything he's talking about that's coming from these people in DC who basically watch West Wing and decide how to run the government is called MMT, Modern Monetary Theory, which is cooked up, fake, and crap. And so anytime somebody says MMT, QT, QE, be very nervous because they're hoping you won't pay attention to the realities of how money actually works since it came off the gold standard. But anyway, so
those are made up words. Those are made up phrases. They created that crap out of thin air. You know, things that it's pretty, very interesting about the Fed. If you do the research on the Fed and start realizing who's running all these things, the different Fed governors and the Fed presidents across the country, and you look at their history on that, you start to find that they're trying to make policy and make decisions for us on the main street. But all of them, except for, I think it was 5 or 4, don't quote me exactly, but it's 4 or 5 people. They're in leadership in the Fed. And then those few that were not at the Fed, they were educators. And not to shit on educators, but guys, educators right now are giving out degrees in the theory of the person teaching you about some sort of theoretical process that's never been practically applied. And I don't know, are you a fan of the series Billions?
I watched part of it, but I couldn't stomach it after about season one.
So I watched all of it because I just got caught up in it. But in season one, one of the main characters, Axelrod and his wife were talking, and they started talking about the education system. And one of the things she said, and I don't know to the extent, but I'm guessing with the name of your podcast, I can say what I would like to say here. But yes, she said that everything in academia is a big fucking deal because the stakes are so small. Think about that statement, guys. The people out there who are running all these things, the people who are educating our children that don't have any practical application, they think it's a theory that they can hand out all they want because they're not the ones responsible for proving it. It's not their life that's going to get hurt when it gets proven wrong. They don't care. They just get accolades and these stripes and shit to put around their neck when they go to these ceremonies because they created something out of thin air. Now, thin air, nothing gets created out of thin air. And somehow we have currency that's created out of thin air these last few years. So when we're talking about inflation, to understand inflation, guys, inflation is too many dollars chasing too few items. You want to see inflation at work, you go to an auction. Go to an auction that has one item that everybody in the room wants. You will see inflation at work because those paddles will be going crazy until the one person with the most amount of money in the room willing to spend the one item will take it. Now, if you walk into that same room, there's only 2 people that want it, that value of that item is much lower. That price of that item is much lower. We are right now in a situation where they've flooded us with currency. 40% of the U.S. currency was printed in 18 months and distributed out through our markets. Then you've got the pandemic that we can get into hours of that conversation that has now created a problem with supply chain and a problem with labor. Because of that, it's driven the price of everything through the roof. Now we have this inflation that is now through the roof. We've got the Fed chairman, Jerome Powell, who's supposed to know all these things. And a statement he made in the last 90 to 120 days was very, very telling. He says, what we've learned about inflation is we don't know enough about inflation. So what I'm explaining to everybody is you need to secure what you can secure for as long as you can secure it. As a real estate investment finance expert in the lending space, and I'm telling everybody, you get that damn 30-year fix, you lock it up, and you never pay that off until you absolutely have to. That money is deflating so fast that you borrowed a fund is never getting paid back the money they lent you.
That's the present value of money versus the future value of money. Y'all should probably all go back and take economics classes and listen to what Aaron is saying, because I'm going crazy right now watching the mainstream media with their machinations over what they've done to inflation. But y'all, you have to look at how it's calculated. They keep taking items out so that the number looks better in the media so that they can hopefully prop the markets up. But if you look at the markets over time, stocks are valued out of whack. The yield curve is in a bad place. Nothing makes sense right now. And you know this because every time Powell talks, the market throws up. And frankly, the best economic advice I can give anybody is whatever Jim Cramer says, do the opposite. So you start looking at what's coming out of the talking heads doesn't match your personal experience. And so this goes back to the way that we finance properties. We all know that everything's more expensive because we shop at the grocery store. These talking heads and the academics apparently don't go to the grocery store and don't see what beef costs today, that eggs have tripled in 2 years, and that everything has gotten shrunken. So I have teenagers in my house, and so they eat Doritos, even though I am totally not in favor of that. I'm not fighting about Doritos. The bag is now down to 9 ounces. I mean, it's wild to watch the shrinkflation going on, which is designed to make you not ask questions. And so now let's look at the way interest rates work on real estate. Back to investment real estate in specific, everybody knows on your residential, there's low down payment options. Well, you also don't have to have 100% to buy a real estate investment property. You can do some interesting things. The first property is the easiest one to buy, as we know, because that can be a second home. And then you have lots of advantages. But anything that's 1 to 4 is going to have better down payment options than 5+. But you got to start figuring out, how do you use the money of the bank to provide housing for other people? That's how I look at real estate investing. I'm providing housing for my neighbors as an investor. And so if I use the bank's money, I can have more properties so I can provide more housing for my neighbors. There's always an upside to it besides being somebody who wants to be financially stable for the future. But you cannot buy something planning to refinance it. We saw this happen over and over with those 80-20 loans, those no-doc stated loans, 2 one-arms, 3 one-arms that we did nonstop at the beginning of the last recession and actually into the recession before the banks really changed their lending criteria. And I think it's coming back too, because if you remember, the Clinton era is when the banks were forced to give loans to people that should have had more education before they got a loan. So I'm not saying that everybody that lost their house to foreclosure with a bad loan was a bad person. That's not it. They were not properly prepared and educated for success in that loan. And that should have happened, but the banks had to give the loans out. That was the precipitor of what happened in the Great Recession. And what are we seeing right now? The banks are being told to give more loans out and not going along with financial education about how it works and why to stay put, why the 30-year fixed is the way to go long term. So you got to ask more questions, y'all. You can't just assume that what you saw on Instagram or TikTok is the truth. And if you don't understand any of these monetary things, take a class at your community college. You'll find better instructors in a community college than you will in an Ivy League institution all day long. And so talk to me a little bit about what you're seeing investors doing right now. So for me personally, I'm a mom and pop investor. My clients who are investors are mom and pop. We're still competing with the hedge funds in a big way. So how are you effectively setting your investors up to compete with the big hedge fund money that's still gobbling up real estate?
Hedge fund money is going to start, I believe, backing off a little bit because of what's seen going on there. It has some that have shut down. A lot of those iBuyers have really started to close up a little bit and get more of a rein on what they're doing because they're not seeing the performance of what they're planning on doing because they overpaid for everything. That's what happens when you don't understand what you're looking at here. And to talk about all the things that you just referenced, All these things are extremely important to understand, and it's extremely important to get the right team as a real estate investor. I tell people you really need to focus on two things. One, who are you? You're the CEO of your real estate investment business. No CEO ever had a viable or flourishing company by getting other executives to take minimum wage. You've got to get good people that are willing to have great experience to guide you to make that company more viable. So you're the CEO of your business. Now you have this figurative board table. You're going to be working. A lot of times there's turnkey people out there. Now you're going to find the right ones. You got to interview them. They're going to be at that board table with you. They're going to be your entire operations division. One mistake many people think is like, I'm just a mom pop investor. I'm going to go out there, find the house. I'll go get the materials and I'll rehab it myself. You're not a plumber, right? You're not a cabinet guy. You're not a drywaller. You're not a roofer. You're none of those things. You're this over here, whatever it is you might be. Maybe you're a teacher, and maybe you're a, I have people that work for the municipalities. That's how you created the money to buy the home. Let the people that create the money to make you money do their job and step out of the damn way. But you got to get the right people. So get the right operations people to work.
If you've ever wondered why some realtors do more business than others, then you pay attention to them and do what they do. In fact, one of my favorite friends in real estate is Deborah Beagle. She's in the Nashville area. And she will tell you, as managing broker of the Ashton Group, that the agents who join her team on Follow Up Boss are getting an average of 2 homes under contract in the first 90 days. If you want to be like Miss Beagle, go to followupboss.com/crazy. You'll be really glad you checked it out. And frankly, so will your clients, because they'll get to use you and be amazed by your real estate awesomeness. Go to followupboss.com/crazy.
Now you have to find the right people on the finance side. We just talked about, I live in a world full of predators. You talked about the Clinton era and what they're saying to make more loans, and it was an education issue. They turned the sharks loose in the fish hatchery back then. They just tore everybody up. And I was guilty of that shit because I didn't know any different. I stepped into it in 1997. I telemarketed until the first part of 1998.
You were told you were helping people get into a home for the first time, and nobody told you how to keep them in there. That was the problem.
First time home buyer loans. It's amazing how many people say, well, if I buy investments, it'll affect my ability to get a first time home buyer loan. I'm like, you don't want one of those damn things. It is the most predatory damn thing you've ever put your hands on. They have sold it like it's awesome, but it's really taking from you. The other thing that I'll point out that we in the lending industry is the most predatory thing in the world is convincing you to refinance in those first three and four years. So let's go over a quick amortization table, not to derail from part of the question, but I need to explain to you exactly how we take from you, how we as the banking industry have set you up. So we talk about the 30-year fix. We'll sell the 30-year fix. That's what they do a lot of the time until now they're going to sell you the arms. Now, when they sell you the arms, there's like, you know, I've guaranteed my refinance in 5 years. I've guaranteed my business for the next 5 years, right? And it's going to keep going. But let's say you did the 30-year fix. And let's talk about two guys you bought on the exact same street, same house, same floor plan, same price, same everything closed on the same day, same rate. One guy listened to the lending industry, says you refinance when you get that rate to go drop 1%. So in 4 years, he refinanced that house. So I have an exact situation that I can reference, $120,000 loan this guy had in 4 years, 48 months later, he comes to me, I'm going to refinance at a lower rate. Like, you shouldn't do that. You can't pull cash out. He goes, I don't care about the cash out. I want the lower rate. I couldn't convince him. So when we finally refinanced that house, he had paid it down. He paid $36,000 and change in payments. The balance was down about $6,000. When he refinanced that house and he put the cost back into the loan, he owed $102, $106 less than what he started 4 years before. And he was happy. He did it and he does it again. Can you imagine if that guy kept doing that every 4 years, 20 years from now, he will have paid $180,000 and have the exact same balance he started with. The guy down the street has 2/3 paid off. Who's winning? Definitely the guy who just stuck in his damn loan. Here's the other way.
The lender was winning too, because he's making.
Oh, the lender was killing it because they only collected interest on him. And then they collected costs on him and they left him in financial servitude. He is now a rat in their wheel. Now, what I have done, I've created this tool. You can go to your app store. It's on for iOS and for Android. It's called the QJO investment tool. It stands for the Quit Jerking Off Investment Tool. The reason I included that is when people are hunting rates, it's all you're doing is jerking off and not getting anything of any value, wasting your time and your energy. So what this does, it has multiple different calculators that my investors can use. not only are they the CEO of their business and they're getting me as their advisor to help guide them through this, I also give them tools to be able to make them successful in the business. There's an amortization calculator on there when you download this. It's the third calculator. You can put in the percentage down, the purchase price and the interest rate, and then you can calculate it. Upper right-hand corner is a calendar icon. You can move forward every year for 30 years and see how much you paid and then how much inflation eroded that dollar. You will see you never even pay back what you borrowed. You have the numbers right in front of you. Now, this is going to be a more robust calculator in the future, but at least gets people started to show that I am here to guide you through this and help make sure that you're successful as that business owner. Now, what you're looking for when you're looking for real estate, whether it be single family, duplex, triplex, fourplex, you're looking for something you can keep reasonably rented for the entire time you own it and something you can raise rents on. The other thing you want is something that has minimal amount of potential maintenance and potential, and if you keep it rented, you're not going to have that vacancy. Why is that? We want that because if you accomplish that, who pays off the loan? We?
Those wonderful tenants do.
The wonderful tenants. So let's say you got a 20% down deal. We're going to use round numbers. I need to do the numbers so everybody can get their head to see what I'm thinking and talking, and because I'm not going to display it here. If you got a $100,000 property, you put 20% down, you got $20,000 you invested. That's your money. And let's say you had $6,000 in costs. You invested $26,000. You got a lending partner like myself to get you the $80,000 that you're never going to pay back, right? And now you've got the tenant because you bought a property you keep reasonably rented for the entire time you own it and you're able to raise rents on. Now, that person is paying off, or a group of persons over 30 years is paying off that mortgage for you, that $80,000. If you take $80,000 divided by 30, you'll find that they are contributing $2,666.67 every year to your business. And you did, and when you calculate that into your investment of $26,000, that's a 10.25% increase on your investment every single year. That's the baseline, guys. That's 10.25% increase on your investment is just getting started. Too often, I think the real estate world has done a disservice to the real estate investor by preaching cash on cash return for the last however long, because it's so damn easy to sell. It was a cop out. I'm on podcasts all the time right now, punching these guys in the utensil, telling them you screwed everybody by telling them that cash on cash return was the main metric. It's the cherry on the sundae. You need to have the damn sundae first. So when you're talking cash on cash return, now like, man, we're not getting that 14%. We're not getting those 10%. We're getting 2. Who gives a shit what you're getting as long as you're paying for it? Right now, we live in an inflationary environment. We just talked about that. Because of that, we get to raise rents. Rents have been double digit percentage increases year over year for the last few years. Yep. So I tell everybody, just calculate 5%. Let's say at a 5% increase on this property is renting $1,000 a month, and you're only getting $100 a month cash flow. Like, should I buy this property? It's only $100 a month cash flow. Well, year two, you can raise it 5%. What's 5% of 1,000? You'll probably come up with 300 as the first number people say. No, it's $30. You only go up $30. No tenant's getting excited about $30. And you sure as shit ain't getting excited about $30. But that $30 right there, actually, sorry, it was $50 because it's 5%, not 3%. So it's a $50 increase. Nobody's getting excited about $50. But your $100 just became $150. That's a 50% increase in your cash flow. The next year, you do the same 5%. And you can do that same number. Now, your cash flow percentage will drop a little bit, but you'll find over the years, it'll always be double-digit percentage increases, and you will achieve that 10%, 15%, 20% cash-on-cash return as you grow that because of inflation, as you're paying back people less than what you borrowed. And you still have tax benefits, you still have appreciation, you still have all these things. So you need to get away from the cash on cash return metric. That's not your gospel way of calculating things. It's, can I keep it reasonably rented and can I raise rents? Those are the things you need to focus on. If you can do that, you're going to have a successful business. The other thing that really pisses me off about the industries that we're wrapped up in is this whole cash on cash return metric that they've been bullshitting people with their bullshit pro formas, is making people think that you can buy a business that's cash flowing day one. When in history have we ever had a damn business that cash flows day one? They've always told you have 5 years worth of 3 to 5 years worth of reserves so you can get your business off the ground. That's how it was supposed to be. Now, I came into an industry that was being manipulated during the Clinton era. And they're coming with all these crazy loans. And I was just as guilty as writing all those crazy loans as anybody else. My first five, they said, once you hit 5 years, you're just going to increase in income. My first 5 years, I was making $300,000 a year within my first 5 years. I'm like, it increases from here? I was so damn indiscriminate with what I was spending. I had an $18,000 a month nut to crack because I was in my early 20s. Complete idiot. You hit 2008, what happens? Everything went to shit. Now, it didn't just go to shit in the market. I also was on a motorcycle heading out of town, 80 miles an hour. I got taken out. I woke up that night in a hospital bed with the inability to walk. I had a collapsed lung and my memory only lasted 3 minutes. So not only did I have a destroyed business, we have a destroyed market. I had to come back from that. So it was actually one of the greatest blessings of my life. So one thing I like to tell everybody is that you're going to take an ass beating at some point in your life, and it's going to happen whether you cause it or somebody else causes it, but that's going to be the greatest turning point you've ever had. The greatest things that have ever happened to me in my business because of the worst thing that ever happened at the time. So some people say, how can you find value in that kind of an ass whooping when the market changed like it did? Everybody else was just, they were losing their homes. They were pinwheeling out of control. They were changing businesses. I had creditors calling me like crazy. Like I said, it was an $18,000 a month nut to crack. When I shipped them my first week's, faxed them over my very first week's medical bill of $1.7 million, they backed off.
Bet a they lot. Did.
They literally said, how can we help? Which was amazing. I came out of that with still my home and my vehicle and my family. And I didn't have to file bankruptcy because I was able to negotiate all that down. I was able to get out of complete debt. I was in insane debt at that time. So the greatest thing that ever happened to me was getting completely obliterated physically. And it took me up until this last year to come back from all of that physically. I pushed myself in a lot of ways I shouldn't have. A lot of other stuff. I did rescue for the sheriff's office for 10 years after all that had happened. I really taxed my body where I shouldn't have. But now I finally got back to 100% as a 48-year-old man in the last 11 months. And I feel freaking amazing. But that was one of the greatest things that ever happened to me in my life by taking that ass whooping. And I'm telling you now, we're going into an ass whooping. One thing you need to remember, you're either going to be weathering an ass whooping, going into an ass whooping, or coming out an ass whooping. That's life. We're going into one right now. You're going to learn some great things from it to apply later, but do not lay down by getting your ass kicked and lick your wounds. Get back up and keep moving, because that's how you learn how to adapt. And when the things come that are not near as hard, you're going to thrive where everybody else is still laying there licking their wounds.
Amen. Amen. Do you love David Goggins as much as I do? Because you're like speaking the David Goggins language right now. Do you know who he is?
I do know who David Goggins is. A great, great man. Honestly, I've only seen some of his reels and stuff like that. Never read any of his books. I do spend a lot of time with guys. In fact, I was all day yesterday snowmobiling with Larry Yatch. I don't know if you know who he is. He owns an outfit called Steel Team Leaders. He was the former leader of Steel Team 3.
Oh, wait a minute. He got referenced by Goggins in his interview with Joe Rogan last week.
Yep. Larry's a badass.
The book is out right now, and it's called Never Finish, but he's talking about this very thing of, like, his body was destroyed, but he did it anyway. And he's like, you can either stay ready or you can be getting ready. And then the market we're going into right now, we got a lot of people that are like, well, I'll get ready when it hits. Maybe it'll hit, whatever. They're planning for something in the future. But some of us are going to stay ready, and you have to. It's like coming back from a motorcycle accident. You're either going to do the PT every day or you're not going to get better. You're either going to plow through or the scar tissue takes over. I mean, you got to choose. And it's a painful choice to make, but we're going to be all painful choices.
And I like that statement, never finish, because people ask me, you know, like, so do you have a time when you're going to retire? And the guy's, when I go to the grave, I'm coming in hot. There is no finish for Aaron Chapman. I have goals, but I don't have goals because they're never achievable.
Right.
When you get on Everest, you set a goal and you get on Everest, like, cool, I'm on Everest. That bitch will kill you if you sit there too damn long. You got to get your ass off and go to the next one. So it's nonstop. Because we're down right now, create a great opportunity for me. Right now, have you ever read the book, The Goal by Eli Goldratt?
No, but I'll check it out. The Goal.
The Goal. It's about the theory of constraints. Basically saying your business can only go as fast as your tightest bottleneck. If you influence that bottleneck incorrectly, your business is going to slow down significantly. So it's a story that tells a process. So it talks about a guy who was given a promotion to go oversee a plant for this company that makes, if I remember correctly, it was aircraft parts. They were the worst performing plant in the company. He goes in there and he's watching the process. They got robots, they got CNC machines, and it's all flowing the way it should. But as he gets to the end, there's a pile of parts that aren't shipped. He goes, why aren't these shipped? He goes, well, during quality control, he found there was a flaw in the raw material, so we can't ship them. So what he did is he requisitioned for quality control to happen up front with x-rays and whatever. And the company's like, no, we can't do that. It's expensive. He goes, let me just try it. Well, they never let the bottleneck work on anything that should never be worked on. So now the production went through the roof because everything was shippable at that point. Now, what I did is I changed my business to reflect that. You know, me in the lending world, we do something called a prequal. And then 3 weeks later, when you're supposed to close, the underwriter's wanting all these things, and the loan officer's blaming the underwriter for being an asshole because they want all this documentation. No, the loan originator sucked with the prequal from the very, very beginning. So what I do, I hired underwriters to do my prequals. That pissed off my corporate officer. That's the most expensive people in our process, and they're doing a $15 an hour job. Like, give me 90 days. Now I had the most productive process because we never 100%. Worked on anything we should be working on. Now, where does it work? There was that work for me today. I've been doing this all along, at least for the last 5 years. Well, there's another thing stated in this book called stream theory from the CEO of Toyota back in the 70s. He says the company Toyota was a stream bed. And in that stream bed, what you'll find is your ability to flow water. That's your business. That's your revenue. That's your productivity. Now and again, just naturally you get big rocks in it, you get humps, you get valleys in it, and that will impede the flow of water. When it hits that, it'll overflow the banks and you'll lose that productivity. Every now and again, you got to dam it up and clean it out. I haven't been able to do that for 3 years because we've been going so balls out for so long. I just keep banding and adding and adding and adding people to us to where I have a staff of 32. Now, because the market has slowed down, I didn't have to dam it up. Because if you dam up all that business coming to you, all you do is cut new channels for somebody else to benefit. Right. I'm taking advantage of the drop. We hired Larry and his team to come in. He's working with my team. We've cleaned it out. We've got all new procedures in place. Now, when the water comes up on its own, we will flow much better and much more than anybody else in the industry. So you take advantage of when things go sideways or go slow to clean everything up when nobody can see you cleaning it up, and make yourself so damn viable in those moments that people can't help but come to you. When there's everybody else screaming, come to me, they're like, we're going to that one guy. Because where were these some bitches before? It's all noise. They're going to go to the one person that they know is going to get it done.
You hear that, realtors? Now is the time to retool, put your systems in place, get everything cleaned up and working properly. It's not to sit back because it's quieter right now. It is to work right now so that you are at the front of that. So, Aaron, if anybody wants to reach out to you and find out more about what you do for real estate investors and get into this mindset and space, what's the best way for them to find you?
Just go to aaronchapman.com. And if for some reason that doesn't work, you Google Aaron Chapman. There's only one bald bearded redneck lender wearing a steel hat.
Well, we'll have to find you a husky hat and get you a better looking hat, although you won't
what
wear
we
it.
Gotta do is we got to get face to face and I'll get my steel shit on. You get your husky shit on and we can say we'll just compare who's got what.
Oh, I'll win just so you know.
Oh, I know. You're probably a lot more stylish than I ever will be with it.
I mean, I can still tack out a saw and it's not operating properly. And I'm pretty proud of that fact, but you know.
It could be. Those are dying things, right? People, there's so many things that are dying in this world that people can't do. And it's so frustrating that there's all this experience and all this thing. I mean, all we leave this world with, in my opinion, is relationships and experience. And you can't have one without the other. And because of people not having skill sets like that or learning skill sets like that, they don't get to have all the great experiences that we get to share a story on the campfire about.
Right. It's like, I want my kids to learn all the stuff I know. They have no interest. And so I can force them into it only so far. But at some point, I have to hope that they'll realize they've got access to a whole different environment at home than their friends have. And I just keep on trying. But I miss my
radio. We just try. We can influence. We can't make anybody do anything. But yeah, if anybody's looking for conventional lending in the single family, duplex, triplex, fourplex space, and it can be for your primary residence too. We do that. We do FHA. We do VA. But we focus on.
What states do you work in? Were you licensed everywhere?
I'm licensed in 28 states. Any place that people are actually doing real estate investing.
All right, North Carolina, because you know everybody's bringing their money here.
I'm doing North Carolina like crazy.
There we go. All right, friends, make sure you say something nice about Aaron, at least about his beard, in the comments. Give a thumbs up. All of his contact information is in the show notes for this episode. I hope you've enjoyed a very vibrant economic conversation. It's more than you're getting anywhere else. So make sure you come back here for more, and I'll see you next time.
Okay, now, don't forget to go try Follow Up Boss so that your business can continue to expand in professionalism, and then you can meet some more crazy people yourself. I really appreciate Follow Up Boss sponsoring this episode, but mainly I appreciate them for giving y'all double the free trial time with no credit card required. So make sure you go to followupboss.com/crazy, and then let me know what you think. I'll see you guys next time.
As always, I'm so super thrilled that you joined in for more crazy shit. And if you're a realtor, investor, inspector, lender, or just a regular human being who happens to have an unbelievable story that you need to tell the world about, or frankly, you just need to one up the story you just heard, then make sure to DM me on Instagram at Lee Thomas Brown, or tweet me at Lee Brown, or frankly, any social network where you hang out. I'm there. And if you had some fun, then you totally want to subscribe so you don't miss out on any future episodes.